Welcome to the Deep Dive. We sift through interesting sources to pull out the key ideas and help you get a clearer picture. Today, we're looking at a really old text, Psalm 18, but it's got some, well, surprisingly relevant stuff for today. It's not just some ancient poem. It's actually a powerful song about thanksgiving and deliverance from King David, you know, that David. Our goal here is to unpack its core messages and see how these, well, timeless truths can speak to our own lives, maybe give us some encouragement for living faithfully and strengthen our trust. So to really get Psalm 18, you kind of need the backstory. Think about David. This guy faced giants, politics, was hunted by his own king, Saul, for years. This song, it's his personal song of thanks, basically, after God delivered him from all that, especially Saul. You can almost feel the raw emotion, the intense trust coming through. It's really something forged in hardship.
Yeah, and what's striking is how he kicks it off. He doesn't jump into the problems first. Nope, verses 1 to 3, he just lays it out who God is to him. He says, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. And then the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower. When he says rock, it's not just nice words. It's like absolute stability, unshakable, and fortress. It's refuge, right? Safety, deliverer is active rescue, even buckler, like a shield and horn of salvation. It's all about defense, power, victory coming from God. It's total reliance declared right up front. But like you said, it wasn't just abstract praise. He immediately goes into how bad things really were. Verses 4 to 6, he says, the sorrows of death compassed me, and the floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The sorrows of hell compassed me about. The snares of death prevented me. Just think about that language. Sorrows of death, sorrows of hell. It's more than just danger. It's this, like, existential dread, being completely swamped. Snares of death prevented me, like he was trapped, cornered, no way out. But right there, at rock bottom, he cried out to the Lord. And, well, he says God heard him.
Okay, and the description of God's response, it's honestly incredible. It's not some quiet whisper. It's huge, cosmic, like the universe itself is reacting. Starting around verse 7 through verse 15, David paints this picture of God physically coming down. He says, then the earth shook and trembled. The foundations also of the hills moved because he was wroth. Wow. There went up a smoke out of his nostrils and fire out of his mouth devoured. I mean, can you picture that? God's anger at David's enemies literally shaking the planet, and it keeps going. He bowed the heavens also and came down, and darkness was under his feet, and he rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yeah, he did fly upon the wings of the wind. It feels less like symbolism and more like David experiencing God using nature itself, thunder, hail, lightning as weapons to scatter his enemies. What does that kind of dramatic, almost violent imagery tell us about God's commitment?
Well, it definitely tells us God isn't passive, right? He's not just watching from afar. This intense imagery, it underlines God's immense power, his willingness to step in decisively, maybe even dramatically, for those who are faithful. It's like this epic divine rescue mission. And it wasn't just a light show. It led directly to David's rescue, verses 16 to 19. David says, he sent from above, he took me, he drew me out of many waters. Those many waters probably mean, you know, overwhelming threats like drowning and problems. He delivered me from my strong enemy. He brought me forth also into a large place. That large place implies freedom, safety, room to breathe. And the reason this is key, because he delighted in me.
Right, that phrase, delighted in me. It makes you wonder, why did God delight in David so much to intervene like that? And David actually gives his own take on it. He connects God's help to his own integrity. In verses 20 to 24, he says something like, the Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands, for I have kept the ways of the Lord and have not wickedly departed from my God. He's not saying he's perfect, obviously, but that his heart, his basic direction was towards God's ways, trying to live right even when it was hard.
Exactly. And he builds on that in verses 25 to 27, talking about God's character, how he relates to people. He observes that God is merciful to the merciful, upright to the upright, pure to the pure. It's like God mirrors our approach to him. But then there's this contrast. God will save the afflicted people, but will bring down high looks. He humbles the proud. It really emphasizes God's justice, lifting the humble, helping the oppressed, but opposing arrogance. It suggests our character, our humility, our integrity. It actually matters in how we relate to God.
And it wasn't just rescue, was it? David clearly saw God as the source of his strength, his empowerment. If you look at verses 28 through 36, David describes how God equipped him for battle, for leadership, for overcoming huge obstacles. God lights his candle, right? Enlightens his darkness. That's a great metaphor for guidance, for insight. And then he says, through God, he can run through a troop and leap over a wall. That sounds like more than just physical ability. It's like supernatural help to get past whatever is blocking the way, whether it's soldiers or, you know, life's walls. He even says God taught his hands to war, made his feet like hind's feet, like a deer.
Yeah, agile, sure-footed on dangerous ground. It's about navigating tough situations skillfully.
Right. And he says God girded him with strength, made his way perfect, gave him the shield of salvation. And this part is amazing. Thy gentleness hath made me great. Wow.
Striking, isn't it? It suggests God's power isn't just raw force, but it comes with this gracious guidance that truly elevates David. Mm. It's a real picture of partnership. And that partnership, it resulted in total victory and then this outpouring of public praise. The end of the song, verses 37 to 50, it's all about triumph. Enemies gone, subdued, destroyed. He talks about God making him head of nations, people he didn't even know serving him. And then this huge declaration, the Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. He decides right then to give thanks, to sing praises among the nations. It comes full circle, you know, from sheer terror to deliverance to telling the whole world about God's greatness.
Okay, so we've unpacked this incredible story from thousands of years ago. Deliverance, faith, God's power. But here's the crucial question, right? How does this ancient song jump across all that time and actually speak to us, to our lives, our stresses, our challenges today? How can Psalm 18, you know, encourage us to live faithfully and maybe genuinely strengthen our trust in God now?
That's exactly where it gets practical. I think Psalm 18 offers some really solid spiritual truths that are, well, still incredibly relevant. First off, it strongly affirms that God is a reliable protector. He's that unwavering foundation. All those metaphors David uses, rock, fortress, shields, they're not just pretty words. They're like a map for building spiritual resilience today. When your world feels shaky, maybe a job loss, relationship trouble, a health scare, whatever, this psalm points you to where real stability lies, not in your circumstances, but in God himself. That's faith strengthening right there, leaning on the rock. Second, it's a huge demonstration that God responds to the cries of the faithful, that dramatic rescue. Earth shaking, heavens bowing. It shows the sheer power of prayer, especially when you're really desperate. That should encourage all of us, shouldn't it? When we feel totally overwhelmed or trapped, call out, your cry is heard. It builds faith because it reminds you God isn't distant. He's involved. He responds. And that makes you more willing to obey that nudge to pray, even when things look bleak.
That's so important. It's easy to feel like those desperate prayers just vanish, but David's experience says, no, they land. They matter. Don't underestimate a simple cry for help.
Exactly. Third, there's this theme that righteousness matters. Not like earning God's favor, but living in sync with him brings blessing. When David connects God's reward to his integrity, it's not boasting. It's recognizing that living God's way tends to lead to good things. And that applies everywhere, doesn't it? Integrity builds trust. Trust is vital for leadership, for relationships, for, well, everything. So this encourages us to be faithful in our daily choices, knowing that obedience isn't just a duty. It actually positions us for God's support and helps us lead well. It shows living God's way is practical wisdom.
So integrity isn't just this abstract religious idea. It's actually foundational for stability and effectiveness in, well, in real life. It's about building solid character.
Precisely. Fourth, Psalm 18 really shouts that God equips his people. David gives God all the credit for his success, his fighting skill, his ability to overcome obstacles, being able to run through a troop or leap over a wall. It's a huge reminder for us not to rely only on our own strength or smarts when we face challenges, whether they're physical, emotional, work-related, whatever. This really strengthens faith because it points to God's enabling power. It encourages us to obey, to step out, trusting he'll provide what we need, even if it feels impossible. It moves us from self-reliance to a humble dependence on him. And the last big takeaway for me is gratitude leads to public praise, and that strengthens faith. David didn't just say thanks quietly. He declared God's greatness among the nations. That encourages us to share our stories too, doesn't it? To give God credit when he comes through for us. And when you do that, it doesn't just help others. It actually cements your own faith. You're reminding yourself and everyone else of God's goodness. That public gratitude fosters deeper obedience and builds up faith, both yours and the community's.
So let's bring it right back to you listening right now. What does all this mean when your life feels unstable, when you're facing a crisis, or maybe you just feel completely swamped? It means, just like David leaned on God as his rock, you can too. Find your steadiness there when everything else is shaking. It means remembering that your character really does matter. Integrity, humility, faithfulness, these things honor God and actually position you for his support, even when it feels unnoticed. And it's a reminder that your strength for whatever you're facing ultimately comes from a divine source. It encourages that humble dependence, not just trying harder on your own.
Absolutely. The enduring power of this psalm, I think, is how it confirms God's character, his strength, his justice, his faithfulness again and again. And it inspires this deeper, more active, more obedient trust in him, no matter what you're walking through. It's like a timeless guide for navigating trouble with faith and coming out singing.
So as we finish up this deep dive into Psalm 18, hold on to its core message. God is our unwavering rock, our fortress, our deliverer. He hears us, he values our integrity, and he equips us for every single challenge. And maybe something to think about, have you ever experienced a deliverance, big or small, that was so profound you just couldn't help but declare God your rock, your fortress, your deliverer?